I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, astronomers spot what could be clouds on Pluto, raising new questions about the former planet. First, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf signs an executive order raising the minimum wage for a limited group of state workers and contractors under his jurisdiction. WHYY's Mary Wilson reports the Republican majority legislature shrugged off the governor's past proposals to raise the statewide minimum wage.
About 450 state workers will now be paid $10.15 an hour. Starting in July, certain state contractors will also earn that wage, with the exception of human services contractors. Wolf says he's making the change in the absence of progress on legislation to hike the current statewide minimum hourly wage of $7.25.
The goal is to do what I can as governor to make sure that the people working in Pennsylvania have a living wage, or as close to a living wage as we can get it. This is fair for workers. This is fair.
The change is expected to cost about $4 million this year and more in out years, as the order calls for the wage to rise with inflation. Republicans call the move more symbolic than substantive and say it shows Wolf is incapable of working with the GOP-controlled legislature. Mary Wilson in Harrisburg.
SEPTA's police department discloses that an officer has been disciplined, but no one's getting fired after a man died in police custody last fall. The Internal Affairs report out today found that one officer acted appropriately by deploying a stun gun to subdue the suspect, but another made a bad decision that delayed medical treatment. More from WHYY's Bobby Allen.
It was just before 2 a.m. on a Monday in October when a SEPTA officer heard a male voice as he was closing down the Huntington L station in Kensington. It was 24-year-old Omar Lopez insisting that there were more trains coming, but the last one had already left. Once outside, Lopez got combative. He punched the officer and grabbed his gun belt. The officer responded.
He deployed the taser 10 times. All for less than 5 seconds. As a matter of fact, six of those times were for 1 second.
SEPTA Transit Police Chief Thomas Nestel says as the fight got heated, the officer tried to call for backup.
Where are you fired for?
The dispatcher is trying to figure out the officer's location. His radio code name is Car 4.
We can't find an officer. He's not at 34 Allegheny. We're unable to get a location on right now, but he's screaming for assistance.
Backup eventually finds the officer, and Lopez is arrested. A sergeant arrives and has him transported to a hospital 3 miles away. There is another hospital about a half mile away. When Lopez arrives at the ER, he isn't breathing and has no pulse. Medical examiners later said he died not from injuries related to the stun gun, but from a PCP overdose. Nestel says the incident has spurred department-wide change.
From this point on, the officer is required to notify radio when they're exiting their vehicle to go either open or close the station. We're also obtaining GPS technology to track our equipment and our personnel.
The sergeant who sent Lopez to the wrong hospital was disciplined. The identities of the officers involved have been kept private since there have been death threats lodged against them. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The Philadelphia Housing Authority is using eminent domain to take thousands of properties in North Philadelphia around the aging Norman Blumberg Towers for the largest affordable housing project in decades. That means moving hundreds of residents, and even those who want to leave are upset with the process. WHYY's Ryan Briggs reports.
Beatrice Mack says she and her 5 children have been living in fear ever since a Philadelphia Housing Authority demolition crew started tearing down vacant houses on the block of Oxford Street. The excavator outside is so close that vibrations rattle the lampshades in her living room.
It's shaking my house. So I'm afraid that with me being in the house that my house might collapse. And they're in process. They're in process of knocking down the one right next door to me, so it scares me.
PHA is tearing down homes around the Norman Blumberg Project Towers west of Temple University to make room for 1,200 new affordable housing units. The agency plans to take Mac's house, too, but there's a problem with her title. For now, she's stuck, even as the Housing Authority moves forward with redevelopment plans. Mac says she feels steamrolled.
I would like for them to treat me fair. Because they want my property, I don't want theirs.
PHA Director Kelvin Jeremiah says the ambitious $500 million project will remake a neighborhood long scarred by poverty and crime. But that can't happen without better housing.
You stabilize the housing, you can address crime, you can address economic opportunity, you can address education, etc.
To Mack and other remaining residents worried about living through the demolition phase, Jeremiah says that he trusts his workers to do the job safely until everybody is relocated. He says the disruption and displacement will be worth it for a project that he describes as transformative.
This is an opportunity to flip the script in terms of community redevelopment. And so we're aggressive on that. I'm not going to apologize, frankly, for the work that we're doing.
Mac isn't the only resident whose life has been disrupted by PHA's work in the neighborhood.
If we would have known that it was going to be this sort of a process, of course, I don't think anybody would have moved in.
That's Mario Glover. When he rented a house across from the tower complex a few months ago, his landlord didn't tell him the building was about to be condemned.
So if that was the case, I felt like PHA, if they were going to eventually own the home, should have enforced the landlord's not allowing tenants to move in.
Renters displaced by eminent domain are supposed to be given several years' worth of rental assistance as compensation. But PHA told Glover he hadn't lived there long enough to qualify.
They said it would be up to $750 to move, but that's only after we've signed a new lease, only after we've given up a first, last, and security deposit to move, which is another financial burden because not only do I have to move my stuff without the assistance that they say they're going to give us, then I have to hope and wait that it's going to come.
He says he wants to contact a lawyer to dispute PHA's offer, but in the meantime, he's getting bombarded with calls from PHA's relocation contractor asking him to sign a release form forfeiting his right to live in his house.
I've been trying to reach you for the past couple of days regarding your notice of for a move.
But some people are happy to escape the neighborhood. Raymond Sharkey is one of the last residents on a block of Ingersoll Street that's pockmarked with vacant lots. He says PHA offered him a nicer home in the Logan section in exchange for his crumbling building.
I told him I didn't want the money, I want a house, so they give me something fair. So they took me out to find a house, they searched me around, you know, showed me the distance and stuff. I went from house to house to house till I found something I like. So I'm just waiting till we do this, what you call a sit-down, whatever, and, you know, so I can move.
He says he's happy with the process and his new house. Sharkey says it seemed like time to move on, although he's still figuring out if he'll miss his old neighborhood.
In a way, because I've been around here half of my life, but in a way not because due to the fact, like I said, these houses are old. You know what I mean? Look at the neighborhood. Before we used to have a block full of houses. Now look, yeah.
Beatrice Mack is in one of the last houses on her block, too. She says she can't wait to move away from the dust and noise of demolition crews, but hasn't heard back from PHA in months about her settlement.
I really haven't heard much from them, all but the notices that they stick in the mailbox.
For WHYY News, I'm Ryan Briggs.
Turning to this evening's headlines, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says he's monitoring negotiations between New Jersey Transit and rail worker unions who threatened a strike this weekend, but he says it won't keep him from taking a vacation. Christie has said he's going on vacation tomorrow to celebrate his 30th wedding anniversary. He says he plans to be back by the end of the week. Rail unions have authorized a strike for early Sunday if no agreement is reached. New Jersey U.S. Senator Bob Menendez has co-sponsored a bill that would help reduce lead poisoning in children living in federally assisted housing. The measure would, in part, help determine when landlords must begin lead remediation efforts or relocate children and their families from a lead risk. Menendez introduced the bill along with Senator Richard Durbin, a fellow Democrat from Illinois. 54 degrees, mostly clear skies at 6:15. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, partly cloudy, low overnight around 45 degrees. Tomorrow, get ready, mostly sunny, high approaching 70. Wednesday, sunshine, high 74 degrees. Thursday, partly sunny, high 74. There is a 30% chance of showers. And Friday, sunny, high 62. Still ahead, even after a car accident left him paralyzed, the music never stopped for a New Jersey musician known as Gooch.
This was a whole new challenge. You know, I had to completely forget everything I knew about guitar and relearn it.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Cooper Neurological Institute supports WHYY. Their team is available 24/7 to treat the most life-threatening and debilitating strokes or brain injuries. Cooper offers a full range of neurological and neurosurgical services, including brain surgery, endovascular neurosurgery, and epilepsy, migraine, and movement disorder care, with offices in Camden, Voorhees, and their newest location, Glassboro. To schedule an appointment, 1-800-8-COOPER or cooperhealth.org/stroke.
The University of Delaware MBA supports WHYY. The UD part-time MBA offers busy professionals the opportunity to pursue their education and their careers with flexible online and on-campus options and a variety of specializations. Prospective students can drop in anytime during their upcoming information sessions on Wednesday, March 18th and Wednesday, April 6th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Learn more about the University of Delaware MBA, including information on their national ranking from PayScale at udmba.com.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. New images of Pluto have scientists rethinking previously held notions about the once-upon-a-time planet. Joining me to help rip up the playbook, Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Clyde Tombaugh would be amazed. He discovered Pluto less than a century ago.
And I think we're ripping through any of the ideas he had about this planet. When New Horizons spacecraft made its close approach to Pluto last summer, we had some expectations of what we'd see because early photographs taken from a great distance began to reveal detail on the surface. But for us to now have been able to, after its close flyby, be able to identify vast, smooth plains versus 11,000-foot mountain ranges and layered atmosphere, this is really turning out to be a very interesting place, much more so than any sort of planetary dynamics theories might have purported. And then the other interesting thing about these mountains is that they're not rock and they're not anchored to a continent. What they seem to be more than anything else are some sort of floating, shifting ice mountains. But the latest amazing thing to discover is the possibility that in those layers of atmosphere of nitrogen and methane, there may be some condensations that seem to be forming what look like clouds and cloud streaks. Now, for that to happen, it means that the atmosphere is much more dynamic than just layered. It indicates that somehow there is perhaps a heat source that's causing convection, possibly, that causes vapors of methane and nitrogen to rise higher in the atmosphere where that vapor cools and condenses into clouds, perhaps. The interesting thing about this mission is that because the spacecraft is so far away, because its ability to transmit is so limited, we'll continue to get images right through the summer on into the fall. And it seems that every image we look at, it's just one surprise after another.
You know, there are going to be images of a solar eclipse this week, and I suppose if you act fast, you might be able to go catch it.
If you caught a flight tonight over to Indonesia, you just might be able to get there in time for the eclipse. It's actually happening Wednesday morning, which translates to tomorrow evening, our time. Weather conditions out in that portion of the world this time of the year are notorious for being overcast, rainy, thunderstorms. So if you are going, your chance of observing will be better if you're on a ship at sea. However, to really do it well and easily without the need of a plane ticket, if you just jump online, there are a number of places where you would be able to catch video tracking of the eclipse. SLOOH, SLOOH.com is one location where you could find video tracking of the eclipse. And that would happen, again, tomorrow evening between 6 and 8 p.m. You can watch it over dinner.
Looks like some warm days and early evenings in the forecast this week, Derek. With clear skies, what's available to be seen in the night sky in the Philadelphia region this week?
It's a great time to be out to check out the transitions from fall to winter to spring. If you're out in the early evening just after sunset as the sky darkens, you can still catch the last remnants of the main fall constellation Andromeda. It's just above the western horizon, and that means the great galaxy in Andromeda, M31, is also just above the horizon for those who have a telescope and are trying to catch this. And if you turn toward the south at about 8 p.m., we'll find the winter circle of stars centered on Orion the Hunter, Taurus, Auriga, Gemini, Canis Major, and Canis Minor, all encircling the main one, again, of Orion, easy to see. But if you turn over toward the east at 8 p.m., high in the east, you'll find the main constellation of the spring sky, Leo the Lion. It looks great.
Now let's note this. When next we meet, we'll have to refer listeners to Heading Outdoors 9 p.m. rather than 8 p.m.
Indeed we will, because Saturday night coming up, we switch our clocks forward 1 hour from Eastern Standard Time to Daylight Saving Time. So it makes us feel a little bit better about the coming spring and summer months a few weeks earlier.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, Chief Astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. A young guitarist in New Jersey has earned the right to sing the blues. Ryan Nelson, known as Gooch, was 19 when a car accident left him a quadriplegic, wheelchair-bound, and unable to use his hands. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that he's just released his third album.
When he was 12 years old, Gooch started gearing up for a career in music. Before the accident in 2004 that paralyzed him, he was playing a folk rock style of guitar.
Like Dave Matthews or like John Mayer, you know, like just kind of more standing up and things like that. But this was a whole new challenge and a whole new, like, it's a whole new thing, you know. I had to completely forget everything I knew about guitar and relearn it this way. I'm paralyzed in all four limbs. So the bottoms of my arms, my fingers, my stomach muscles, and everything like below my chest doesn't work. I don't have control over it. I take a bottleneck slide, put it on my thumb, a thumb pick, put it on my thumb, and slide it up and down and play the strings like that.
With this slide guitar sound, Ryan Nelson's songwriting slid into blues music. Here, the 30-year-old plays at McGee Rehabilitation Hospital.
Attention, everybody. My name is Gooch. I'm a former patient here.
Nelson recovered here after his accident 12 years ago, learning to navigate life with new restrictions. He's back now to play for other patients.
God don't make me go back to Jackson. Sky turn black every time I do. Heaven don't like the way I'm living. Don't make me go back to Jackson. Sky turn black every time I do.
In 2008, Nelson was living independently from a wheelchair, and he formed a band with a childhood friend. They called it 61 North. They released two records and shared a stage with the Allman Brothers and the Zac Brown Band. But then Nelson was diagnosed with cancer.
5 or 6 years after my accident, I got really, really sick, really skinny. Started to bruise all over my body and just didn't know what was wrong. Felt terrible. Finally found out that I had CML leukemia.
Right now, Nelson's leukemia is in remission, but his daily chemotherapy drugs cause fatigue. Nevertheless, he found the energy to form a new band called Gooch and the Motion. A few weeks ago, it released its first record, produced by Joe Niccolo of the Butcher Brothers.
Like, he took Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking, took that bass line, and then we were able to play on top of that, use some Tom Waits lyrics.
Diamonds on my windshield, and tears from heaven.
Just has a really unique sound that has a little bit more produced, kind of a hip-hop sound involved with like the kind of rootsy sound that we do.
I'm pulling into town on the interstate. I got me a steel train in the rain, and the wind bites my cheek through the wing. And these late nights and freeway flying, it always makes me sing. Yeah, it always makes me sing.
Just before Gooch and the Motion released this record, tragedy struck yet again. Nelson's father was also diagnosed with cancer, lung cancer, and he died in January.
I would go and play music for him in his hospital bed when he was on hospice, and I saw what it did for him, just for us to go in there and play for him and put a little smile on his face when he could barely speak.
Glory, glory, hallelujah, since they laid my earth down.
This is why Nelson is playing at McGee Rehab, not just because he's a former patient. He started a nonprofit to bring music into hospitals, prisons, and other institutional settings. It's called Music in Motion. Nelson wants to use music to help people ride out the downtime. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, how do you take your coffee? Black, extra sugar? How about with a side of Cuddles? Philadelphia's very first cat cafe had its grand opening yesterday, with the city's feline fanatics arriving in full force, donning ears, tails, even full costumes. At the Parisian-themed Le Cat Cafe, customers pay an entrance fee to relax and enjoy free Java while surrounded by adoptable cats. Yes, every cat's available to go. That's because Le Cat Cafe is actually an adoption center masquerading as a coffee shop. Local nonprofit Green Street Rescue runs the cafe, hoping the cage-free environment will help the cat's personality shine for prospective new owners. And if you can't adopt but still want in on the fun, not to fret. Le Cat Cafe's owners assure that the space is not just for those looking for a new pet. It's a respite for anyone seeking some feline company. But reservations are strongly recommended. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.